I suppose when we talk about Moses, the plagues, and the Exodus, it's such a big subject that we're going, how could you possibly do this in a short period of time? Well, I want to give you some encouragement. There will be a test. That ought to keep everybody focused. And so we're going to see. I don't know how we're going to work this, but it's an online test, and you can do it with your phone. I know, because I wrote it and developed it. But as we go through it, this will provide all of the answers for that test. So Moses, the plagues, and the Exodus, and that story, is bulk of that is in the Pentateuch, the first five books of the Bible, the first five writings, or called the Book of Moses, Books of Moses. In Genesis 28, verses 2 through 4, Jacob, later called Israel, was said that he was going to become a fruitful, that God would be make him fruitful and multiply an assembly of peoples, and that he would inherit the blessings of Abraham, and he would inherit what we come to call the promised land, which God gave to Abraham. So we have this instruction or this expectation of Israel to multiply, and indeed, he had 12 sons, and forming 12 tribes in Israel. And they went from, the children of Israel went to Egypt, and with Jacob, like I say, later called Israel. And the direct descendants of Jacob were 70 persons because of the famine that was occurring in the land of Canaan at the time. And it lists all of those out. There's an interesting, there's probably more than one book that has been written on following the tribes of Israel to the modern time, and they all follow those various tribal names. We then have the experience in Genesis about Joseph, and that's an interesting story all by himself, one of the sons of Jacob, who was kidnapped by his brothers and sold to Egypt. And you can remember Joseph's life with the letter P. First of all, they threw him in a pit. And that's where kept. Now, that had to be where he couldn't climb out. He was stuck there. And rather than kill him, Judah said, let's make a dollar off of him. Well, I think it was shekel. Make some money and sold him to the cousins, the Ishmaelites. And off he went to Egypt. So, P for pit. Then he went and he was sold to Potiphar's house. So he was a servant. So we have pit and Potiphar. And then we have, a bad situation in that he was falsely accused and he was sent to prison. So we have the pit, the Potiphar's house, and in prison. And after some time, he interpreted the dreams of the baker and the wine taster. And he got out of prison and was employed in Pharaoh's court. So we've got pit, prison, or Potiphar's house, prison, and then Pharaoh's court. From there, he became the number two ruler of all of Egypt, which is pretty dramatic. You say, well, how is he going to go from the peace from that? But if we go through it, and I don't have the scripture right here, it's another message about Joseph, but what happened to Joseph? He said, take my bones back to where I came from to bury me. So the last P is pine box, because they had to haul his bones back to the land of Canaan. So bear in mind, those 2 million Israelites that were heading back were carrying Joseph's bones. So we see here Joseph, all of his the land of Egypt was instructed or ruled by Joseph then. And then it says, arose a new king over Egypt who did not know Joseph. In other words, Joseph was dead, the old Pharaoh was dead, a new leader was there who didn't know him. So how long does it take to forget somebody? 2-3 generations? The memory's gone, it's just not there, no matter how dramatic it was. And that's when the Egyptians set taskmasters over the Israelites, and the Israelites became their slaves. So this new Pharaoh rose, didn't know Joseph. And they said, you know what? These Israelites are being fruitful and multiplying way, way, way too much. So what did the Pharaoh say to the midwives who delivered the Hebrew babies? And they said, if it's a boy, kill it. But if it's a girl, you can let it live. And what was remarkable was that the midwives feared God, and they didn't do what the Pharaoh said. They didn't kill the male children. They left them be alive. And the Pharaoh said, well, what are you doing this for? I told you to kill the boy babies, let the girl babies live. And the excuse was this. The Hebrew women are not like Egyptian women. They're lively, and they give birth before the midwives even get there. So that was their story they were spinning, and they were sticking to it. There's no evidence that they were ever punished for this, for saving the baby boys. And that's one of the reasons that Moses was able to survive. So Moses survived this experience because the mother had the baby, but it was a boy. She didn't want it killed. And what do babies do? They make noise. Those of you that have had kids might be aware of this. I've had a lot of kids, and they make a lot of noise. And so how do you disguise the baby noises? Well, it says she took them in a basket in the river. Put them on, and so he's floating on the river with the rushing of the river or whatever, and the bulrushes. Made up a special floating basket. And then his sister would watch. That was safe. Girls could live. Older sister was watching. And he survived. And so as the story goes along, of course, the Pharaoh's daughter came along, found a baby in the river, and said, I don't have one. I'd like one. So she took him home. I said, and bring them. Where is the birth mother? I need a nursemaid. And Moses' mother was the nursemaid for her own baby that he was now being raised in Pharaoh's court. Moses grew up. He became a military man in campaigns. When he was 40 years old, he decided to take a look at his roots, the children of Israel, and to visit his brethren in the land of Goshen. And now that means he's had 40 years growing up as an Egyptian, speaking the language, and that doesn't mean he didn't speak Hebrew as well, because his mother did and his sister did. He knew who they were. And he had foreign military experience. He was basically a grandson, an adopted grandson of Pharaoh. And Moses visited the Egyptians, and he saw a Hebrew being beaten by an Egyptian. And it had to have been egregious. Now, Moses was not new to military methods. And so in Exodus 2 and verse 12, he killed the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. In other words, nobody's going to know about this. Because he didn't want his brethren, fellow Hebrews, to be suffering under the Egyptian taskmasters. Because they were building buildings, and who knows what all, whether all that they built. Well, but what happened? Somebody ratted out Moses. The Pharaoh heard about it in Exodus 2:15. And the Pharaoh said, we can't be having this. So he sought to kill Moses. And Moses did the rational, logical thing. He left. He fled Pharaoh and dwelt in the land of Midian. Went far away, beyond the immediate reach of Pharaoh. Now, when Moses lived in the land of Midian, raised a family, got married, and then he was called to return to Egypt to lead the people out of Egypt. But that's 40 years later. He was 80 years old. 40 years in Egypt, 40 years in the land of Midian, and then he thought, well, I'm powerless. You know, what can I do? I'm just one person facing the phenomenal Egyptian army. And this is where we have the serpent experience. And Exodus 4 and verse 2, what did the Lord said to him? Moses, what's that in your hand? He said, a rod. Verse 3, he said, cast it on the ground. He cast it on the ground, became a serpent, and Moses fled from it. I dare say that every single one of us here, if we had a rod and threw it down and became a serpent, we would beat feet and go the other direction. Now, I have a brother-in-law who's a snake handler, but very few other people would be curious enough to go check it out and see what it would be like. And then he heard this horrible words from the Lord, reach out your hand and take the snake by the tail. I've seen some of the videos of what they can do. They turn around and you're toast. Well, Moses did it. Caught it, it became a rod back in his hand again. Well, in other words, he knew where the power came from. Now we go to Exodus 7. Moses is 80 years old, and he got his brother Aaron, who's 83, and they went in to ask Pharaoh to let my people go. In other words, they're done being, you know, they don't want you to be a taskmaster. Let them go home. They came here hundreds of years before, let's go home. Well, then we have the situation where Pharaoh decided he didn't want to let the free labor go. Well, free labor is never really free. They have to eat, you know, and there's all the care that goes with it. But it was still, there were no excessive payments, I can be sure here. So we said no. And so there were a series of plagues that occurred that each time that Pharaoh said no, another plague would come along. So the first one, water turned to blood. Now, and there's a great scenario about this in the movie Ten Commandments, where a man in Pharaoh's court has a cup of water, and he looks shocked at it, and he pours it out because it was blood. The water had turned to blood. There's a plague of the frogs, the lice, the flies, pestilence for diseased livestock. My favorite, the boils. Ever had a boil? I did when I was 12 years old. I had two of them on the top of my shoulder. And I still remember everybody in gym class at school stayed well away from me because I had these two nasty look. And so when I read the book of Job, I understood it so much more clearly. Or if you look at some of the graphic representations in the old Bible story books, that have boils all over people's body. It's hard to imagine. Thunderstorms of hail and fire. Now, this is an interesting one because how do you have hail and fire? And the storms, now the astronomers say, well, there could have been comets passing near Earth that it would rain hydrocarbons, which would have been like fiery hail coming down. Not a comforting thought. Bad enough here a couple of weeks ago, we had golf ball sized hail pouncing, bouncing on our car. And then locusts. Well, if you've got anything left after the hail, the locusts are going to come along and eat it. It was during the Great Depression. There were grasshoppers plaguing the Midwest. And my grandfather's cousin had married a guy in Kansas, and he moved up to Minnesota to escape all of the grasshopper plagues. And he told us, he said, the green grasshoppers were everywhere. And he said they were eating everything alive in front of them. And he said the chickens were chasing and eating the grasshoppers. The chickens ate so many grasshoppers, the shells were green, the egg whites were green, and the yolks were green. He said, they just, because the chickens were having a grand old time. So I can imagine that this something similar, but the vegetation was gone. And then you have darkness for 3 days. Now, I know that lights will go out. You lose power. We've lost power in storms before. But darkness for that means the sun is dark. So we don't know exactly what would have happened there. But it was definitely a supernatural event. If you haven't been a believer before, that's got to drive you close. I do know that when Christopher Columbus came to the New World, he knew his calendar. And so when he was captured by the natives in the Caribbean, and he said, if you don't let me and my people go, I will black out the sun. Now, he knew that there was an eclipse coming. And sure enough, the sun started blacking out, and they couldn't wait to get rid of it. Okay, just from having the knowledge of that. But darkness for 3 days. And then we look in the Bible, we read about Joshua's long day. How it was extended. Well, a British archaeologist or anthropologist got to think, what's on the opposite side of the world? He went to South America. And they have, in Chile, they had a long verbal history of the long night. That it was a long day in one part of the world, which was a long night in another part. So this darkness for 3 days is so out of character that it had their attention. And then, of course, we have then at Passover the death of the firstborn, the 10 plagues. And after being softened up, water to blood, frogs. I don't know how many of you really appreciate having a lot of frogs around. The guy who never became my brother-in-law dated a sister-in-law in Hawaii for the feast. And she was wearing spiky heels, and he was taking her back to her hotel after dinner. And the frogs were everywhere in Hawaii, and she spiked a frog right square in the middle with a spiky heel. Well, he's standing out there on the sidewalk, and he's holding her ankle trying to get the frog off. And everybody's doors are opening up at the motel to see this man with his hand around a woman's ankle to get the frog off, because she wasn't keen on doing that herself. Frogs, not so much. Lice, I've had students with lice. That's ungood. Flies, I found out you have more flies with cows than you do with sheep. Pestilence in livestock, boils, hail and fire, locusts, darkness, and death of the firstborn was really the kicker that did there. So we look in Exodus 12, verses 7. This is what the Hebrew people were told. Take blood, put it on the doorpost, the lintel of the house where they ate Passover, and then eat the flesh on that night, roasted in fire, with unleavened bread, with bitter herbs, they shall eat it. In other words, stay home. You're going to eat it at home. You're not going anywhere. And that was Passover, because if they didn't stay home, and they did, because they knew that they were hard-pressed, then who would the death of the firstborn hit? It hit the Egyptians as the death angel came out. So we read on. Then we had, they said, okay, fine, go. Go away. The Pharaoh told the Hebrews, go away, get out. No. And get out and stay out kind of thing. Well, after Moses led Israel, they went across the Red Sea, another miracle, or three. And they went 3 days in the wilderness and found no water. How long can you live without water? About 3 days. After 3 days, you start crashing. Crash and burn. And they came to Marah where they couldn't drink the water. It was bitter water. Ever try to drink alkali water? Or any kind of bitter water? Not. Wasn't going to work out. And you have now the congregation then camped in Rephidim, no water. Again, this is the second event. It was fresh water provided earlier, fresh water again. So you have another miracle for water to drink. And the people weren't real happy with Moses. In Exodus 17, in verse 3, why have you brought us up out of Egypt to kill us and our children and our livestock with thirst? Well, what a logical thing, right? Here's this guy who led us out here. We could have been taskmaster slaves in Egypt, but no, he drug us out here so we can all die an ugly death. At least back there we were alive. Moses cried out to the Lord, what shall I do with these people? They're almost ready to stone me. Well, they're starving. Now, it's about, I think in the 1920-ish, there's a book about 9 meals to anarchy. It's a little over 100 years old. And I used to teach this in economics classes, that people will tolerate almost anything for 3 days or 9 meals. And after that, they will do anything for survival. He'll cast aside all restraints. And Moses was seeing it. It's a human characteristic. They're ready to stone me. And of course, God delivered the water from the rock. We go on to Exodus 17. We have the battle with the Amalekites. And Moses said to Joshua, choose men and go out and fight with Amalek. I'll stand on top of the hill with the rod of God in my hand. Remember the one that got turned to a serpent? That's got to be real heartwarming to Moses to know God's power was right there. And Joshua did as Moses said, fought with Amalek. Moses, Aaron, and Hur went to the top of the mountain. And then, as it were, Moses, when he held up his hand, then Israel prevailed. But when he put his hand down, then Amalek's army prevailed. But you can only hold your arms up for so long. Ask any beginning barber, because they got their arms up all day, and it's hard to do that when you're first learning. And they'll tell you how to hold your arms up. And I thought of that. Moses wasn't a barber. He wasn't used to holding his arms up all day. So what did he have? Aaron on one side, Hur on another, and they're bracing his arms up so they can prevail until the going down of the sun all day. Can only fight in daylight hours. After dark, they don't know who they're doing. And Joshua defeated Amalek with the edge of the sword. So you have these traumatic events occurring. Now, 1 Peter 2:9 identifies Israel, spiritual Israel. But you are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, his special people, that you may proclaim the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. So we have this physical Israel that was preserved as a nation, as a prototype, a foretype. And then we have spiritual Israel, as we read, and as I read earlier about children of Abraham, if they are believers in Jesus the Christ, then they are that chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation. So that's the Cliff Notes version of Moses, the plagues, and the Exodus.